those who are living upon the earth. And note those words, those who are living where? Upon the earth, when the intercessor of Christ shall assist in the sanctuary above, are to stand in the sight of a holy God without a mediator. It's a little diagram here. At this point, CP stands for total probation. And that's where Christ ceases his intercession in the sanctuary above. Now, on this earth, God will have a people living in the sight of a holy God out in the center. Now, what are those people called? 144,000. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Now, what about them? He says, their robes must be spotless, their characters must be purified from sin by the blood of sprinkling, for the grace of God and their own diligent effort. They must be conquerors in the battle with evil. While the investigative judgment is going forward in heaven, while the sins of penitent believers are being removed from the sanctuary, there is to be a special work of purification of putting away a sin among God's people upon the earth. Which statement makes it very clear that the 144,000 will be found without guile in their mouths on the close of the nation, right on to the second coming, and then of course beyond that to eternity. And Patrickism will stop, so I'll close at this point. And we'll pick up this thing and meet again tomorrow. Morning from the Zohar of Ages, page 89. And we have here some thoughts on the life of Christ as a child, as a youth really. The chapter is called Days of Conflict. And I read now from the first paragraph on page 89 of the book of the Zohar of Ages. There are some who sought his society, feeling at peace in his presence, but many avoided him, because they were rebuked by his painless life. Young companions urged him to do as they did. He was bright and cheerful, they enjoyed his presence, and welcomed his ready suggestions, but they were impatient at his scruples, and pronounced him narrow and straight-laced. Jesus answered, it is written, wherewithal shall a young man cleanse his way? By taking heed thereto according to thy word. Thy word have I hid in mine heart that I might not sin against thee. Psalms 119 verse 9 and 11. Often he was asked, why are you bent on being so singular, so different from us all? Let me pause there a moment. They asked him a question which indicated that they had prejudged him. They said to him, why are you bent on being so singular, so different from us all? It is a mark of modern society that many people go out of their way just to be different, to be singular, to be odd, to be unusual. And why do they do it? Because they have a certain motivation in their mind, no doubt, to move in that kind of direction. But with Jesus Christ, he did not bend himself to be different. He was different. His very nature, his disposition, his thinking, his character was different. And Christ simply lived out day by day what he was. Now, with that thought in mind, let's take this a little further. It is written, he said, blessed are the undefiled in the way, who walk in the law of the Lord. Blessed are they that keep his testimonies, and that seek him with the whole heart. They also do no iniquity, they walk in his ways. Psalms 119 verses 1 to 3. When questioned why he did not join in the fights of the youth of Nazareth, he said, it is written, I have rejoiced in the way of thy testimonies as much as in all riches. I will meditate in thy precepts and have respect unto thy ways. I will delight myself in thy statutes. I will not forget thy word. Psalms 119 verses 14 to 16. Now we come to the main part of this reading in these next seven words. Jesus did not contend for his rights. Those are words that should be imprinted in the memory of every one of those who claim to be the children of Jesus Christ. Jesus did not contend for his rights. Now, if we are Christ's followers, what about us? Likewise, we will not contend for our rights. Generally, we look upon stealing and kindred sins as a man contending for something beyond his rights. And that is true. And that we regard as being a very serious sin, which in turn is likewise true. But every one of us has rights. Every one of us. And Jesus Christ certainly had rights above us all. He was the King of the universe, the Creator. Therefore, it was his right to expect and receive the homage and worship of every creature whom he'd made. That was his right. But even though that was his right, he never contended for it. Never. Under any circumstances, at no time, in no place. Now the result was, as I read on, often his work was made unnecessarily severe because he was willing and uncomplaining. Yet he did not fail nor become discouraged. He lived above these difficulties as if in the light of God's countenance. He did not retaliate when roughly used, but bore insult patiently. Now what is the most natural disposition for human beings so far as our rights are concerned? To contend for them. Isn't it? The most natural disposition. And if today you want to do some honest thinking, just let your mind go back over your own past life experience, over your day-by-day activities, and think of those occasions when your rights have been threatened, and then study your own reaction to that situation. I think you'll find, if you're honest with yourself, that your own natural response has been to fight for and to contend for those rights. Watch a little child or two little children playing, and one of them has a toy of some kind, maybe a little dump truck or whatever, and the other child sees this and thinks it would be a very nice toy for him to play with, so he reaches out to take hold of it. What does the rightful owner of that truck quickly do? Asserts his rights, his or her rights, doesn't he or she? And then there's a merry old squabble follows. Here's a shed, and then the intercessor must come in to attempt to restore order and peace once more. But the most interesting aspect of this comes in the answer which Christ now gave to the question which was raised when others said to him, why do you behave this way? Why don't you contend for your rights? You know, not only is it natural for a human being to contend for his own rights, but it is also just as natural for a person to advise another person to contend for his rights. I'm thinking particularly of a person in Australia. And this mother said to her daughter, my daughter, whatever you do, fight for your rights, because if you don't, nobody else will for you. And that's a natural counsel to give to another person. When those around Jesus Christ saw him day by day, utterly refusing to contend for his rights, then they asked the question, why? Because he was a person who was singular, a person who was different. While everybody else were continually contending for their rights, Jesus Christ did the opposite. And, of course, there was something extremely singular both in that day and again it would be so in this age. Now I read, again and again he was asked, why do you submit to such despiteful usage even from your brothers? It is written, he said. Now Jesus Christ now gave us the reason as to why he did not contend for his rights. And going back to that word bent, which we read there a little earlier, Christ was not bent on being singular, it was just his nature to be that way. Now he says, it is written, he said, my son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments, for length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee, bind them about thy neck, write them upon the table of thine heart, so shalt thou find favour and good understanding in the sight of God and of man. What an interesting answer Jesus Christ gave. They said to him, why don't you contend for your rights? He says, because God said to me, my son, do not forget my law. In other words, the person who does not contend for his rights is a law keeper. The person who does contend for his rights is a law breaker. That's worth thinking about, isn't it? That gives to us a new view of law-keeping, such as we've not particularly had before. In the past, we have tended to think of law-keeping as strict Sabbath observance, dress reform, health reform, being careful not to steal, to lie, to covet, to take God's name in vain, to worship a graven image, and so on. And certainly, of course, those things are law-keeping. Although they can also be law-breaking in the sense that we can be Pharisees, as were the Pharisees back in Christ's day, legalists, and a legalist, as we shall learn later in this week, is certainly not a law-keeper. He doesn't know its spirits, he doesn't know its character, and he is simply a pseudo, a counterfeit, and somebody who is an enemy of God's law and not a keeper of that law. Consider how the same Jesus Christ later, the lawmaker and certainly the lawkeeper, the one who had come to magnify God's law, found himself in continual conflict with the Pharisees who prided themselves as being lawkeepers. Now come back to the statement again. Jesus replied, in effect, that those who do not contend for their rights are the true law keepers. And if we keep the law in that way, then the promise is that length of days and long life and peace shall they add to that. Right. Let's turn now to Corinthians. First Epistle of Corinthians, and read some words there from the Apostle Paul, who spoke about the fact that the law was foolishness or nonsense to the Greek and to the Hebrew. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 17 and onwards. For Christ sent me not to baptize, but to preach the gospel, not with wisdom of words, lest the cross of Christ should be made of none effect. For the preaching of the cross is to them that perish foolishness, but unto us which are saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and will bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this world? Hath not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? For after that in the wisdom of God, the world by wisdom knew not God. It pleased God by the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. For the Jews require a sign, and the Greeks seek after wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, unto the Jews a stumbling block, and unto the Greeks foolishness. But unto them which are called both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. Now Paul says in those wonderful words, for the preaching, verse 18, for the preaching of the cross is to them that perish foolishness, but unto us which is saved, it is the power of God. Now when Jesus, back there in the early days of his life, demonstrated that he did not contend for his rights, what was he preaching? He was preaching the cross. Because the principle of not contending for your rights is the principle of sacrificing yourself. Isn't that correct?
Mm-hmm.
It's self-sacrifice. And what is the cross? The ultimate in self-sacrifice. Now today, at this moment, let's see how much human thinking we've got left in our minds. See how much we still have our feet back there in Babylon, because Babylon is the epitome of self-service, self-aggrandizement, self-glorification, and self-care. Think right now of your home life, shall we say, or maybe your business life, or whatever it might happen to be. And think of situations existing where there is tension between yourself and other members of your little society. And then try and analyze and see wherein your rights have been threatened and wherein in the past you have been fighting for those rights. And now picture yourself as giving up all contention for your rights. And doesn't a kind of a cold grip of fear enter your mind at that thought? Don't you picture yourself being downtrodden, despised, neglected? Don't you see yourself as losing ground, losing respect and so forth in your family life or in your society as the case may be? Now if we find that to be our response, then we have a little bit of a Greek in us or of the Jew, and we are finding ourselves considering the preaching of the cross to be foolishness. Foolishness in the sense that there's no solution to a problem. I know many, many cases, of course, and I'll tell this particular story not to criticize the man involved. You won't know his name, so it doesn't matter in that respect. But I personally am acquainted with a man who, when he married, found himself right away in a contest with his wife as to who would be the head of the house. It often happens, doesn't it? Over and over again. And as the years went by, the two of them continually fought for their rights, the man proclaiming, I am the husband, therefore it is my rightful position to be the head of the house, and I shall work very hard to ensure that I occupy that place. And so he worked at it. As the years went by, the children came. Remember now, I think there are four of them. Three girls and one boy. And mother and father now campaigned in their own way and time to enlist the children on their side to support their claim to be the head of the house in each case. And mother, because she had the children with her throughout the entire day, while father had to be away at work, won in this side of the contest and gained all the children to herself. So every day was a confrontation between father trying hard to assert his rights and make himself the head of the house, and mother and the children determined he should not be. The more that man fought for his rights and tried to make himself the head of the house, what do you suppose he lost? The very thing he was seeking to gain. When I went to visit him, I was always subjected to a long, sad recital of how he was not respected, not loved, not wanted, not regarded in the house. And when I tried to express these principles to him, he regarded that as being the most foolish possible solution I could bring to him, because the way of the cross was foolishness to him. Now that man did not find what the promise of keeping the commandments offers. He did not find peace, nor did he find length of days and long life, because his health is naturally breaking down with his continual stress and strain. The marriage is breaking up, in fact it is broken up, and they only live together now as a kind of a situation which they have to put up with because of financial and other considerations. But in reality that marriage is broken, it is finished, and it's all broken simply because both parties would persist in the contention for their rights. Now, on the surface of it, and on the appearance of it, the refusal to contend for your rights in any sense of the word at all makes it appear that you're going to lose ground. It looks to the human eye as being the worst possible kind of solution to your problem. But while the ways of God appear to be foolishness to the human mind, as Paul says back in Corinthians, verse 18 again, for the preaching of the cross is to them that perish foolishness, but unto us which are saved, it is the power of God. Now, I'd like to challenge every person in this room today to think very deeply upon the example of Jesus Christ in this respect, and in our deep desire and longing to be the exponents of the law of God in these last days, let us resolve, let us dedicate ourselves to follow his footsteps and to utterly and completely refuse from this day on to ever contend for our rights again. Do you find it easy? Not a bit. Because not natural, it's not human to do that. It's far more natural and human to fight for our rights and to make sure that we are given our due respect and our just rights and so on. But we shall find that if we so become imbued with the character and life of Jesus Christ, that his spirit and nature is put into us, that it will become natural for us not to contend for our rights. Natural. We'll lose that disposition when we're criticized, evil spoken of, when someone else jumps in to take our position and overrides us. We'll never say a word. We'll smilingly let them and go our way without any fuss or worries or troubles and the like. Time will pass, and eventually you will find that in a very wonderful and beautiful way, the very things that you did not fight for will come your way anyhow. I know another case of a man that was very, very seriously misunderstood in his course of action in dealing with a certain problem and situation. And Poker Randy became very excited and upset and agitated because they felt that this particular man was going into serious trouble and doing the wrong thing and so on. And because this man was working in certain directions, others felt that their rights were being threatened. They began to contend for their rights in a very, very emphatic way. And one person in particular worked against this man and did the best that could be done to frustrate him in his work. But he quietly went about his work. He didn't contend for his rights, didn't try to mend his damaged reputation, but simply day by day answered to God and lived as he believed God would have him to live. And time went by. Months went by, during which time this man suffered, as it says here in regard to Jesus Christ. We read those words again. Often his work was made unnecessarily severe because he was willing and uncomplaining, yet he did not fail to become discouraged. He lived above these difficulties as if in the light of God's countenance. He did not retaliate when roughly used, but bore insult patiently. Now, as far as he could see, the day would never come when he would be understood. That's this man I'm talking about, not Christ. Although, of course, it took him a long time to be understood too. But, and so he went about his work, resigned to the idea that he would go through his whole life without being understood in what he was doing, and therefore being worked against and persecuted and so forth. But to his joy and amazement, it was not so very long before one of those who had been working against him wrote to him or spoke to him and said that they had their eyes open. They now realized how wrong they had been in their judgments, and they confessed their opposing work toward him, and now that person has the fellowship and support of the other in a way in which he had never thought possible. There is power in the keeping of God's law in God's way. It is foolishness to the human mind. It seems to be the worst kind of possible solution to the problem. But if we as God's folk will, as I said previously, come to be imbued with the very character of God, and like Jesus Christ, will utterly refuse to contend for our rights, in fact will lose all disposition to contend for our rights, then we will find that we have become true law keepers, not Pharisees, not legalists, but a people who keep the law of God from a law which is written upon the fleshy tables of the hearts. Then you'll find that length of days and long life and peace shall they add unto thee. Try it. You will find that which to the Greek is foolishness will become to you the living power of God. And then we'll find that in this movement, in our families, in our society, we will have a unity and a power which will make the world marvel. And then as they came to Jesus and questioned him again and again, why do you submit to such despiteful usage, even from your brothers? You will reply, it is written, my son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. And that those words, let thine heart keep my commandments, for length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee, bind them about thy neck, write them upon the tables of thine heart, so shalt thou find favour and good understanding in the sight of God and of man. Now our lives must be, and we want our lives to be such a witness, without even preaching, just by living quietly day by day the principles of God's commandments, men will come to you and ask you the reasons for your faith. They did to Jesus. Again and again he was asked. Often he was asked, are the words I read in this page, are we being asked again and again why we submit to such despiteful usage? Are we often being asked why are you bent on being so singular? Not being so singular, in our eating habits or our dressing habits, but being so singular in that we do not contend for our rights and thereby manifest a true revelation of the law and the character of God. If we're not being asked this again and again, then maybe we need to learn more deeply what it means to be a true law keeper. And that is all involved in an utter refusal to contend for our rights, to try and assert ourselves, or to make certain that we get what we know really belongs to us. I do trust that these thoughts today will be a challenge to us. We'll open our eyes a little wider to see just what the example of Jesus teaches us. We might move a little closer to being amongst the 144,000 who follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth, and will stand with him at last upon the sea of glass. May God bless us to this end this morning is my prayer.